The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Once upon a time in Radioland, a towering man strode to a silver microphone and announced to the world these words.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am that announcer, and my name is Todd Wilkerson. And this is the show I announce.
I'm announcing it right now, in fact.
And you have a front row seat to history.
Here's Eric.
Oh, hello. Hey, it's Hour 2, Albin. This is called Hour 2.
Hour 2.
Typically follows Hour 1.
Yes.
Now, if you listen to this program on an app, because everybody on their phones now, they have these things called apps. I got an app. It's the Eric Metaxas Radio Show app. And whenever I go running in Central Park, wherever I go in Harlem, I click on the app and I listen to this program. And it's on a continuous two-hour loop.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I listen to hour two before I listen to hour one.
That's incredible.
I think
it's like going back in time or
something. It's important that people understand that this show is accessible via many, many avenues. You can get an app on your phone. You can listen to us on a podcast. You can listen to us. And by the way, John Zmierich is coming up for the whole hour for his predictions for 2020. But I just want to remind people, there's a million ways to get this show. We're on YouTube. The Eric Metaxas Show is on YouTube. You can listen on Metaxas Super, which means no commercials, no news, just the program. You can get Metaxas Super by paying for it. It ain't much, folks. If you don't want commercials, it ain't much. You can pay for it, or you can give to Christian Solidarity International for $100 tax-free, which goes to freeing slaves in the Sudan. You get signed up for Metaxas Super for the year. You're basically getting something for nothing, and we're encouraging you to do that. But I don't know, Albin, I don't know about you, but I want to talk to John Zmierich.
Yeah,
he's just fun.
I do, too.
And he's on the line right now. John Zmierich, welcome back.
Go.
Hey, Eric, thanks.
Hey, are we waking you up, John? What's the matter?
No. I want to sum up what we were last talking about. Fighting against Iranian terrorism is fine, as long as we completely banish the idea that we're going to go in there, occupy the country, and bomb it till it turns into Switzerland. We cannot occupy one of these countries. We can never have another Iraq, never another Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden fled the country and was killed, yet our troops are still dodging IEDs and bombs and bullets because people like Condoleezza Rice say, if we pull out, we'd be betraying the feminists of Afghanistan. I'm sorry, that's not what America's for. We're not the big brother enforcer of liberal Democrats and feminists around the world, so we're going to go in and transform their countries so they're all like a wing of Barnard College. That is not our job.
Before we go to your fun predictions for 2020, which is we're going to spend this hour talking about that, let me just ask you finally, when you write this article warning against a ground war in Iran or occupying Iran, I don't get the impression this president would ever want to do that. In other words, I get the impression that we might get in a war and that we might end up there. So what you're really trying to say is be careful. Because
he's surrounded by advisors, who many of whom are old-school neocons. And so their habit, they're like, you know, like Pavlov-trained dogs to salivate at the sound of a bell.
Right.
Well, when neocons hear about a Middle Eastern war, they immediately start salivating about how they're going to transform the country and remake it and make it an American-friendly, economically thriving, pro-Israel religion.
And by the way, not that we shouldn't want to do that. If it were possible to do that, I'd be all for it. The only problem is We can't, and we need to face the facts. Yeah. But of course, we should want to do that. It's just that history teaches
really
us
nice
we cannot.
Have a unicorn ranch with a poop rainbow ice cream, but I'm not going to invest.
I have one of those.
You do?
Yeah, I got one for Christmas.
All right, okay. Don't talk about that on the air because this is a family program. Ooh. So, John, let's turn the page. You've written another article at the Stream, and by the way, I was with our friend James Robison down in Miami recently, who.
Oh.
Put together this idea called The Stream, stream.org, folks. Lots of articles by John Zmirak, thestream.org. John, talk to us about your predictions for 2020.
And by the way, John, one of them I predicted about 9 months ago, but go ahead.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay, yeah. Okay. It was, my title is Fear Not, 2020 Will Be Even Stupider Than 2019. I think I've isolated the principle of why events get stupider year after year. They don't just get twice as stupid. Each year sort of squares the year before. So it's not like 2020 will be twice as crazy as 2019.
It'll be four times as crazy.
2020 will be like 2019 squared.
Okay.
It's what scientists call exponential.
Correct.
I wasn't good at math either.
Okay,
why do you say that? Because when people in power, when the elites who are driving these events, when they get away with some kind of insanity and they aren't laughed out of the public square or smacked out of public life or comprehensively defeated, they get emboldened and they try even more, okay? So my theory is that our headlines are coming out of apocalyptic, end-of-the-world dystopian novels by crazy right-wingers in trailer parks who self-published the books and sold them exclusively at gun shows. So I call it the gun show apocalyptic novel insanity coefficient, the GANI coefficient.
Okay, now here's my question. First of all, if it's true that 2020 is going to be much crazier than 2019, that's very bad news. So I'm sorry to hear this. So give us some specifics. What do you mean?
Okay, well, given that transgenderism has worked, they have stuffed that down people's throats, and now people like J.K. Rowling, like the richest writer on earth, people are trying to drive her out of public life and cancel her and make her into the equivalent of a neo-Nazi simply because she insisted that biological sex is essential to being a woman, that women give birth and men don't, and a guy with a beard who just announces, "I now identify as a woman," doesn't become a woman. But by successfully imposing the transgender fantasy on the population, by making especially the younger generation think that transgender people are like black people, and if you discriminate against the meaning, don't let bearded guys into the women's room, don't let them into locker rooms, don't let them destroy women's sports by taking them over, if you don't do that, then you're just kind of like a racist. I would not have believed that the left would get away with that, but they did. To a large degree,
yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
And so what that was like, if the government and the elites can force you to say Bruce Jenner is a woman now, that is their equivalent of 2 + 2 = 5
right.
In the novel 1984.
That's exactly right.
The point of saying 2 + 2 = 5 is to force you to say whatever they want you to say, to show off how much power they have over you, to boast, to vaunt their power. We can even make you say 2 + 2 = 5. We can even make you say Bruce Jenner is a woman. Well,
right.
My prediction is that the next thing is going to be the trans dead movement. Live people breathing, walking, and talking who identify as dead. And you're going to have to take that seriously. You're going to have to refer to them as the late or the dearly departed. College students in the Ivy League will demand their own coffins or maybe open graves. And who are you to say? If you say, oh, you're not dead, you're alive, that's exactly like saying to Bruce Jenner, you're not a woman, you're a man.
I'm going to begin identifying.
That biology trumps fantasy.
I'm going to begin identifying as a 6'5" decathlete in 1976. And if you tell me that I'm not a decathlete in 1976, how dare you? How
That's
dare
right.
you?
Shame on
Bigot,
you.
Bigot. Monster.
Yes.
Well, John, I'd like to think that you're joking. So thank you for joking.
But no, but it continues. I
was a little scared there. Go ahead. What?
What about dead people? They're going to also treat dead people as if they were still alive. The Democrats will go beyond seeking votes for illegal aliens. They'll openly, instead of secretly as they do in Chicago, they'll openly start registering names in graveyards and getting them to vote on their behalf. And I predict that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she goes to her award, they will find a document that says she still identifies as living.
And okay,
then
okay.
Democrats will refuse to let Trump replace her. They'll convey her legal opinions via Ouija board.
I wanted to end this segment on a funny note. I have succeeded. We'll be right back with the great John Zmirak.
My eyes have seen the years and the slow.
Best things about the Eagles, at least for me right now, is that they're not Christmas music. Yeah, even I got sick of Christmas
music.
Yeah,
but that wasn't the music. The Eagles. That was Sweet Home Alabama was not Eagles.
Oh, that was Skynyrd.
Yeah, that's Leonard Skynyrd.
Obviously, that's what I meant.
But
and it's not a guy named Leonard either.
No.
I got to tell you, folks, we get to talk to John Zmirak. And when you got John Zmirak on the line, the best thing you can do is shut up.
Shut up.
John, let's keep going. You want to talk about the Democratic nomination? You say Michelle Obama.
Yeah. Okay.
That was my prediction.
Well, you know, everybody knows that the Democratic candidates are terrible. Even their family members don't really like them very much as candidates. Joe Biden sounds like Grandpa on The Simpsons. You know, he gets up in the microphone and says things like, in my day, Esther Williams was very popular among the Negroes. I mean,
That's exactly correct. It's hilarious because it's true. I wrote a couple of humor pieces on Biden like 10 years ago, and that's effectively what you're dealing with. Now, I just got to say, before you go into the whole Michelle Obama thing, I've been saying the exact same thing, except I said that it will be Hillary Clinton because I believe Hillary Clinton desperately wants to be the nominee, and I believe that Michelle Obama desperately does not want to be the nominee and will not be convinced. But Hillary Clinton just took a job, this is not a joke, as the chancellor of a university in Belfast, Ireland. That sounds like a joke. That's not a joke.
So
I think that's her way of saying maybe she's not going to look for the nomination. But go ahead.
Okay. So Bernie Sanders is getting tired of the campaign. He's canceling events, sending surrogates. I think he might return to his day job, which is as the corpse of Lenin on display.
Is that Bernie Sanders? I was just wondering who that was.
It is
under the glass. That's Bernie Sanders. I had no idea. And what? It's a heck of a job, too. Talk about laying down on the job. He gets paid for that. Okay, so Bernie Sanders, you don't think is going to go all the way?
I don't think he's going to last. You know, he just doesn't have the energy, which is good because I think he is one of the candidates who would do best against Trump because he's entertaining. He's got a personality. I can't help liking him, even though I think his policies are absolutely monstrous. He's got a certain Larry David, crazy old guy yelling at you on the subway in an amusing way.
He's ordering soup at a deli, and he has to go to the bathroom, and he will not suffer fools gladly.
That's right. It's kind of funny. Elizabeth Warren combines two of the ugliest archetypes that exist.
Okay,
in
now
male
say
mind.
This slowly because these two archetypes, everyone needs to hear clearly what.
Right.
So she combines two. Elizabeth Warren combines two hideous archetypes, which are
every man's scolding first wife.
Every man's scolding first wife. Okay, that's one hideous archetype, and you're right.
And,
she does.
And then the school nurse who demands you submit to a prostate exam. Combine those two things. That's the feeling you get every time she starts to talk.
It's kind of funny, though, because I agree with this. In other words, there's something oddly unpleasant about her persona. It has less to do with her policies for me than her persona, that you just – I just don't want to be around that kind of person.
If this was a Western, you must be the new schoolmarm.
Yeah. Actually, no, the schoolmarm would be like 40 years younger. But the point is that we do have still a very, very unappealing group. So
well,
let's
keep going.
You're
going
to keep going. Yeah, is that a joke?
Mike Bloomberg is running. On what platform? Well, he's going to apologize for cutting crime in New York.
Right.
He's going to apologize for all the crude, sexist things he did and said while getting rich. He's promising to confiscate the guns of everyone in America who doesn't work in a private security detail for billionaires.
Right, right.
I mean, he's the ultimate elitist candidate. He's so out of touch. I mean, it's as if Skynet, the computer program from the Terminator movies, were to generate a Max Headroom-style
right.
cyborg and run him for president.
You know what, John? That, seriously, that's true, because he has enough money, and he has spent it, okay? He has had enough money to do the focus groups, to do everything necessary to figure out how do we achieve, with this money, how do we achieve the perfect candidacy so I can get elected. He has done that. He's running ads. He is spending literally millions of dollars running ads, you know, in key states. So he's very serious about this.
Yeah, he's just so unappealing. I mean, well, everything good he ever did, he has apologized for.
Well, that's the funny thing. The only thing good about him is what he did, and he is now saying, everything I did, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, which leaves you that's with right. what? With an odd, out-of-touch billionaire with a lisp. I mean, he's not really a very compelling figure on the stump. That's putting it mildly. And who's left?
And among the major candidates, Pete Buttigieg, who is the dullest gay man in America, a failed small-town mayor. Crime is up 70%.
Wait. You leap past these brilliant lines. Pete Buttigieg is the dullest gay man in America. That, my friend...
Yeah, he can't sing, can't dance. I bet he
that
can't decorate.
That is Everest-level...
I mean, I'm not sure he's gay.
Brilliance. The dullest
thing. I'm not sure he's gay. He might be faking it. There is nothing fabulous about Pete.
Okay. A failed small-town mayor. Now, I think it was Rich Lowry was on this program who told me, and this is not a joke, that Pete Buttigieg, in winning the mayoralty of South Bend, Indiana, the total number of votes that he got to win the position that he now holds is 8,500.
Hmm. Wow.
Now, that's a fact. And based on 8,500 votes, he now is a plausible candidate for 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That shows you how serious the gay lobby is about stuffing their message down our throats. They've got everybody terrified to criticize this guy. They don't want to have their careers ended. You know, I love it when liberal Christians say, oh, the gays are a marginalized group. They're about as marginalized as Michael Bloomberg. They are the richest, most powerful political lobby in America, and they will break you like a stick if you stand up against them.
Right.
You know who's marginalized? Orthodox faithful Christians.
Of course.
We are marginalized. And it's not for us to go around apologizing to the people with power. But there is one thing about Pete Buttigieg that stands out. He was the Democrat who fronted for the abortionist who hoarded the most fetuses in jars in his office. I think it was 4,400 fetuses. This Dr. Ulrich Klopfer was an abortionist in South Bend, and pro-lifers were trying to get some scrutiny on his dirty, dangerous abortion clinic, and Pete Buttigieg fended them off, passed laws, ordinances to protect this abortion clinic, and now they find, when they found the doctor dead, Ulrich Klopfer, look it up, he had 4,466 babies in jars in his house.
Wow.
That will win Planned Parenthood's endorsement for Pete Buttigieg, but I don't think it's a winning message for the whole
But
of
you, know, you know what this makes me think of? Remember, after we won World War II and we freed the folks in the death camps and the concentration camps, we forced the local Germans, forced them at gunpoint, to walk in to see what their government had done. It seems to me, John...
My dad was doing that. My father was one of the soldiers sending the people through the camps.
Wow. Okay. Well, the reason I bring it up is because we need to do something along those lines with situations like this. In other words, when you refer to thousands of fetuses in jars, it just words. It can't be real. We need to see this, and we need every American to face what we have done in this country. The fact that nobody covers this except you and me talking on this radio program, I have to say, we have to face this. And somehow, I don't know how we can do it, but we've got to force these Democratic candidates to look at this, to deal with this, to talk about it. If you want to be pro-abortion, okay, it's a free country, but can you talk about this? Will you dare to talk about this? They won't.
No, of course not. It doesn't fit the narrative. It makes people uncomfortable. It's like dropping a dead squirrel in the punch bowl at a party. I mean, yeah, I'll do that, but most people won't.
Yeah, you'll do that.
Yeah.
We've just got seconds left
in
this segment.
I am the dead squirrel in the punch
bowl. Yeah, you're the dead squirrel in the punch bowl. And you are proud to be a dead squirrel in the
punch
bowl.
Proud and loud.
You're like, you know what? I tell you what, I can do that. Okay, so do you seriously think that Michelle Obama will be persuaded to be the nominee?
I certainly hope not, because she has a chance of winning.
Yeah.
She could win, and that would be scary. That would be a terrible thing for our country. She is not super bright. If you look at her thesis from Princeton, it is semi-literate. It really would not be a good high school paper at a decent high school.
You've seen this paper? I can't believe you. You're freaking me out. Now, folks, don't go away. We have lots more with John Zemirak. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Do not forget, new campaign with CSI. It's an opportunity for those of you who haven't given to give something. Please do not squander this opportunity. That's the big hit program. Everybody's talking about Love American Style. I'm talking right now to our friend John Zmirak. John, you've written an article at thestream.org, and it talks about your predictions for 2020. Some of these are scary predictions. So you're talking about Michelle Obama as someone you really think may get this nomination. I think she's spoken
she
so strongly against
it.
I know that. But I still think, let's talk for a second about the reality of what's on the table. Joe Biden is somehow the front runner if you had to pick. And one thing that I don't like, I just want to say this publicly, when conservatives do the same thing that liberals do, in other words, every little thing that somebody says that's off, they attack viciously. A lot of the crazy stuff that Joe Biden has said, I find endearing. I don't think it means that he should be president. But the point is, people act as though he's malevolent and crazy and whatever. He's Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You know, most of us, it's a little bit like Donald Trump. I find it funny. And when people on our side of the aisle, I guess, speak in a disproportionate way. They think that anytime they see a hair out of place, they're coming in for the kill. I just find that unseemly. I think we ought to be above that.
To some degree. But you know what? If you step in a boxing ring with gloves and you want to play by the Marquis of Queensbury rules, and the other guy takes out a chainsaw, you don't necessarily continue to abide by the Marquis of...
Well, no. I get that idea. I just think that we have principles on our side that are attractive, that the reason people...
See, I don't think our principles are attractive. I don't think principles are attractive to people, Eric. I wish they were.
Well,
but
I know. You're talking about... There's certain voters that aren't going to get what I'm talking about, but
I think we have to aim higher.
People
who vote on principle are already with us. We have to get people by their guts. And we have to convince them, look, Donald Trump was a billionaire who ran successful businesses, and guess what? He's just run a successful economy. Joe Biden is an out-of-touch Democratic Party hack who has spent his whole life talking out of one side of his mouth to segregationists and out of the other side of his mouth to civil rights activists.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
he shouldn't be president of the United States, that's for sure.
He shouldn't be president. The moment he goes into private life, I will stop making fun of him.
Yeah.
When as his hand is taken away from the nuclear button, and as he loses, there is zero chance going to be appointing Hillary Clinton to the Supreme Court, I will stop making fun of the guy.
Oh, no, I don't think we should stop. I don't think we shouldn't make fun of him. All I'm saying is that when he says all this crazy stuff, that is not why I think he shouldn't be president. In other words, that to me would argue for him being a real guy and a normal guy. It's his policies and who he really is. Listen, the corruption, the corruption in the Ukraine with his son, the idea, the idea that this president ought not to have looked into that because, you know, Biden might be the front runner. You've got to be kidding. This is called the swamp. This is the whole reason Donald Trump was elected, was to deal with this kind of thing. This quid pro quo nonsense that's been going on for decades and decades. It is the death of our government. It is the death of America. And this president is right to go after it. So Biden is absolutely guilty on all this stuff. And you are quite right. I mean, he must not be president. I'm just saying that when he talks about, you know, the curly hair on his legs and the swimming pool and corn pop, that to me argues for him as a presidential candidate. It's everything else that argues against
it. Michael Dukakis looking like Snoopy in a tank wasn't really a persuasive argument, but gosh, it really hit people in the gut because it's up something about him that they couldn't really put words to.
Well, no, that's a different point, and I think that's an important point. You're right that sometimes certain things sum things up. I'm taking us too far afield. Your articles, you've written so many articles, I can't keep up.
I've got one last prediction I'd like to talk about, and
then
I need to run because I've got a meeting.
You bet.
The big story in paganism in 2019 was the Vatican's embrace of South American Indian paganism. They actually took a pagan goddess named Pachamama, who is a fertility goddess that Indians sacrifice llama fetuses to in the jungle, and that Christian missionaries have been trying to extirpate for hundreds of years. The Vatican decided we're going to embrace this fertility goddess and make her an emblem of environmental responsibility. And this is all part of a globalist attempt of people like the Ford Foundation and the Soros Foundations and the UN to take control of the resources of the Amazon jungle, to take them away from the people and the government of Brazil. So the Vatican held this synod on the Amazon where they tried to fuse Catholicism with pagan nature worship. And they actually had this pagan idol, Pachamama, on the altar of a church in the Vatican, and they actually had sacrifices to Pachamama brought up along with the bread and wine at Mass with the Pope present.
Well, John, you know I'm not
this
a Catholic.
All really happened.
You know I'm not a Catholic, but I've never been an anti-Catholic non-Catholic. I've always been reasonably pro-Catholic, and I respect my friends like you very much, actually, for your Catholic faith. But my question is, when you're faced with this, now we're going to go to the end of a break. Do you have time for one more segment, or are we going to lose you here?
Yeah.
Okay. But I want to ask you now and in the next segment, how is it possible, faced with genuinely extreme circumstances with the current Pope, how is it that you can remain a Catholic? We're out of time. We'll be right back, folks. Final segment with John Zmierich. This is really crazy stuff. I can't stop listening to the Silver Convention. They are just so awesome.
Awesome.
People listen to this program for John Zmierich and for the bumper music. I know. I'm not afraid to say it. I feel enough self-respect that I can be honest that it's the bumper music and John Zmierich. And by the way, earlier, the fact that I confused Leonard Skinner and the Eagles tells you I didn't get any rest over the holidays. John Zmirak, you're just going to tell us about how is it possible to remain a Catholic when things like you just described, you're not even joking, John.
No.
You are not joking. It's madness.
I'm not even exaggerating.
It's madness.
But I just want to finish with my prediction.
Yeah.
I predict that in 2020, the Vatican will go beyond reaching out to Bolivian pagans and Marxists because that goddess worship is used by the Marxist government of Bolivia. So there's a political angle to it. The Vatican is going to go beyond that, and it's going to do an outreach to snarky atheists of the kind, like Christopher Hitchens types, who some of whom claim that they worship the flying spaghetti monster in the sky, and they call themselves Pastafarians, and they have this whole joke religion which they've invented to make fun of Christianity. I predict that in 2020, the Vatican will have the flying spaghetti monster on the altar.
All right.
And have
I'm glad you're joking.
Centered on that.
I'm glad you're joking because we need a little jokes here because some of this stuff is so serious and
yeah.
so bleak that I just want to take the gas pipe.
Yeah.
Now, John, when you say Pastafarians, there are people listening to this program who they're not up on this. We have to explain some people that militant atheists say that the God of the Bible is so ridiculous, it's like making something up and worshiping something like a flying spaghetti monster. And so they've said this is now going on 20 years, that they mock the faith of people who believe in the Bible as believing in something as ridiculous as a flying spaghetti monster. That's where the joke Pastafarians comes from.
Right, and I think that will be the next pagan idol that the Vatican enshrines.
All right. Now you got to get serious, John. Since we've only got a few minutes, I'm going to make you get serious.
All right.
How is it possible?
We've had really evil popes before. We've had really stupid popes before. I don't know if we've ever had a pope this stupid and this evil, but he has not invoked his infallible authority to teach any of this garbage, so a future pope can correct it. My hope is, assuming that Catholicism is true, it will happen that someone will come and will fix this and will reverse all this stuff. But I there's not going to be that much left of the institutional Catholic Church by the time such a future pope comes around, because all the opportunists, all the crooks, all the untalented gay guys who couldn't work for the Democratic National Committee, so they became Jesuits, all the James Martins of this world are grabbing control of the money and the power in the church.
But, John,
and Pope Francis has already appointed most of the cardinals who will vote on his replacement. So unless there's some miraculous meteorite sent that hits the conclave while some of the good bishops from Africa are still, like, transferring their flights in Libya, I don't see how it gets fixed. But then I'm not in charge of fixing the universe. That's in God's hands.
Okay, let me ask you something.
I don't think this is the apocalypse.
I think stare decisis with regard to the Supreme Court is mostly nonsense, right? The human beings in the Supreme Court can make mistakes and they need to be reversed, and that has actually happened, and we know that. Okay, but when it comes to the Catholic Church, the doctrine is that the Pope speaking ex cathedra, which is to say officially, which this Pope has not done, but when he speaks ex cathedra, he cannot make a mistake. In your opinion, as a faithful Catholic, have there been any things that have been handed down, rulings via councils or popes speaking ex cathedra, that in fact ought to be reversed or have been reversed?
No, I don't think so.
Which is
Pope
why
Francis is not addressing any of that. He is simply simply taking the religion of George Soros, the religion of the secular media, and treating that as if it were the unspoken orthodoxy of the church and promoting it with all his appointments.
So he's kind of a PR man. In other words, he's not acting like a legislator. He's acting like a talking head.
Right. And I think, really, if you ask me my opinion, and I can't prove this, it's just my personal opinion, I don't think Pope Francis believes in God. And I don't think he even finds religion very interesting. I think he is a left-wing politician who found a venue in which he could promote his ideas the way the Reverend Al Sharpton is not really a reverend.
Oh, look, I knew Greek Orthodox priests who I'm convinced didn't believe in the God of the Bible or in Jesus. I know many mainline Protestant ministers who fall into this category. We have to be honest, just because somebody wears a collar or says, I am a reverend this or a pastor or a priest, does not mean that they believe in the God that we do. That is a fact. But when you talk about this, we just got a couple minutes left. Did you get a chance to see the movie The Two Popes?
No, and I'm not going to. It's basically political porn. It's a lie from beginning to end.
I was going to say it has to be.
All the events that occur in the movie didn't occur in reality.
Well, also, don't you think that Pope Benedict never would have? It just seems to me like a wish fulfillment fantasy on the side of people who want to believe that Pope Francis is a good guy, because I cannot imagine that Pope Benedict is anything but an ideological enemy of the current pope.
Also, it falsifies reality. I mean, Pope Benedict did more to crack down on sex abuse in the church than anyone before, and Pope Francis, in fact, has surrounded himself with people who protected pedophiles. Pope Francis was elected by the pedophile faction in the College of Cardinals. That's a fact.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
The man who led the campaign for him was Cardinal Daniels of Belgium. He was the first person Francis brought out on the balcony after he got elected. We have Daniels on audio tape berating a sex abuse victim, telling him not to go public with what his uncle, a bishop, had done to him. So, I mean, Pope Francis has made the sex abuse situation worse. But if you have Netflix on your side, you can convince people that 2 + 2 = 5, Bruce Jenner is a woman, and Esther Williams is very popular among the Negroes.
John, let me just ask you really briefly. We've got about 20 seconds. Why do you think Pope Benedict resigned? I can't believe that he did that. I still cannot get over it.
I suspect historians will find out he was coerced, which will make Pope if they find out he was coerced to resign, then that would be a great excuse to put an asterisk next to Francis's name and cancel everything he did or said. That's happened before with popes who turned out to be anti-popes.
Yeah.
But it will. By the time that happens, Eric, you and I will be in purgatory together watching.
All right. My friend John, you're the best. Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home, sleep pretty darling.
Hey there, folks. This is Eric Metaxas Show. I'm sitting here with Albin. Albin, isn't John Zmierak just the best?
Oh, we love him.
He's the best.
He
now
is.
We can talk behind his back and say what we really think.
Yeah, right.
He's awesome.
Awesome.
I want to say I just got word from the Wall Street Journal that my article will appear this Wednesday.
That's great.
Which is to say on the 8th of January 2020. Is it really 2020?
It is.
How did that happen?
I know.
That's the future.
2020 in hindsight.
We're into the future. Yeah, 2020 hindsight.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
Okay,
my article is ostensibly titled How Dare Christians Vote for Trump? Or how dare evangelicals vote support Trump? Something like that. But it's going to appear, it's an op-ed. So it's an essay. It's not an official article in the paper. It's an essay by a contributor. I'm the contributor. But that's going to be this Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal, because I think we need to make the case of why people who say they're very serious about their Christian faith would support the president.
Yeah.
And I was just in Miami at a kickoff event, Evangelicals for Trump Coalition, because I think it's important to support the president. And again, you never agree with everything somebody says or does or whatever, but you want to make your case, especially when the stakes are as high as they are. I don't think they could be much higher. We've got the Democratic Party. If the Democratic Party were the party of Al Gore or the party even of Bill Clinton, it's a whole other story.
Yes.
But they have gone so off the rails that people need to understand you've got a bitter choice. Even if you hate Trump, you're going to have to really, really think about what it would mean to elect somebody who is the captive of a party that has become something dramatically different than what it was even 5 years ago. But anyway, before we go, we've got amazing guests this week, folks. So much to look forward to. But I want to remind you that we have raised, I just learned, Albin, you just put the piece of paper in front of me.
Yeah.
We raised $260,000 for the CSI campaign to free slaves in the Sudan. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, this is an heroic accomplishment thanks to you. You know who you are. You listen to this program. Many of you were tremendously generous, but I want to say again that we're going to continue this campaign. We're going to reboot the campaign for this month.
Yes.
It's a new campaign, and I want to give everybody an opportunity. Those of you who did not yet give, I want to give you an opportunity to give. And when I say that, I mean to give anything. A lot of you cannot afford $250 or $500 to free a slave or to free two slaves. We understand that. But I want you to have the feeling that you did something. I want you not to squander this opportunity. This is an opportunity that we have this month. It was extended. CSI asked us to extend it. And I didn't really know that until over the holidays.
Right, yeah.
We were not clear on that. Otherwise, we wouldn't have said that this ends January 1st because we were convinced it was. But as we now understand it, no, we're doing another month. So we're going to have five more grand prizes that we're going to draw from. It's all new. So those of you who did not get an opportunity, maybe you got some Christmas money. You know, if you give $10, if you give $20, if you give $50, we're very grateful to you. Very, very grateful to you. So we're asking you to go to MetaxasTalk.com, or I'll give you the number. You can do this now and never think about it again. Here's the number, 888-253-3522. 888-253-3522. I'll say it again. You can do it right now. 888-253-3522. God bless you as you give. Thank you.